Radio Prague News.
A Prague municipal court has issued a restraint order against City Hall. A military helicopter crash in Spain last year was caused by pilot error. And Václav Havel International Airport saw a record number of passengers last year. The municipal court for the District of Prague 1 has issued a restraint order against Prague City Hall for allegedly having failed to respect an earlier court ruling ordering the city to allow the firm e-money services access to the open card system. The news was confirmed by EMS spokesman Martin Opatrny on Monday. The company earlier filed a legal suit against Prague for 60 million crowns. City Hall has not yet responded. The city has been legally at odds with EMS ever since Prague declined to renew a contract on the open card system, charging the company's asking price was too high. The open card is a multi-purpose card used primarily as a transit pass in the Czech capital. The original system dates back to the era of former Prague mayor Pavel Bem and came under heavy criticism for a number of questionable contracts and a high sticker price. The system has thus far cost the city 1.35 billion crowns. An investigation into the crash of a Czech military helicopter during a NATO training exercise in Spain late last year has concluded that it was caused by pilot error. The pilot responsible has been grounded and is being investigated by the military police. The helicopter crashed near Zaragoza, making a hard landing and turning over. Five soldiers suffered light injuries in the accident. Prague's Václav Havel Airport, it registered over 12 million arrivals and departures in 2015. This constitutes a 7.9% year-on-year increase in passenger traffic, the highest in the past decade. The number of passengers should grow further in 2016, when a number of new regular long-distance flights will connect Prague and China, as well as North America. And the Emirates carrier will begin using the Airbus A380, the world's largest transport aircraft, on its line to the Czech capital. The police are searching for a 47-year-old man suspected of purposely spreading the HIV virus since 2013. Police have so far confirmed that in that time frame, the individual had sexual relations with 15 adult men and a minor. Two of them are HIV positive. The police found some 2,000 names in the suspect's cell phone. They are asking that anyone who had sexual contact with the man undergo tests for HIV/AIDS. The suspect, Zdeněk Pfeiffer, is being sought as a fugitive. The police have reason to believe he may be hiding abroad. In other news, the munition site in Vrbětice in the Zlín area has thus far cost the Czech state 348.1 million crowns, the Czech news agency reports, adding that the preliminary figure included the regular monthly salaries of firefighters, soldiers and police officers who secured the site. The final amount will rise even higher due to a lengthy cleanup by pyrotechnics experts. The depot saw two massive explosions in the autumn of 2014, in which two people died. Scattered unexploded munitions rendered the entire site unstable. It was closed off and tons of remaining ammunition was gradually shipped to a newly reopened depot. More than 500 people weathered sub-zero temperatures on Monday, some of them waiting in line since Sunday at 9 p.m. to line up at Vysočany's Regional Bureau to register for furnace subsidies. Jihlava will divvy up almost 239 million crowns to help replace some 1,600 home furnaces. It is the first time that the region is offered the subsidies. The Bureau said it was able to process around 100 applications per hour. I'm Ann Bellinger. That's all the news. You'll find more at radio.cz.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, Czechs are seeking to get a piece of the economic action as Iran opens up to foreign business. Commemorative events are being held around the country to honor the memory of Jan Palach. We have the latest Czech sports news. And in one-on-one, we meet Dr. Irena Edwards, a highly flying lawyer in the UK who is now working to promote conservation in her native Czech Republic. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A major Czech business delegation is currently in Iran as some of the most significant trade sanctions against the country start to tumble. Czech companies have high hopes of cashing in on the opportunities now opening up. Chris Johnston has the story.
It was more chance than deliberate planning that meant a significant Czech business delegation was in Iran this weekend when the final declaration came out of Vienna that the nuclear deal with Tehran was confirmed and some of the most significant sanctions against the country would come down. Minister of Industry and Trade Jan Mladek is heading a 60-strong business delegation that is seeking to pave the way for Czech companies to profit when the pent-up demand from Iran starts translating into orders for foreign firms. Two similar Czech delegations already began prospecting the Iranian market last year. An agreement on economic cooperation with the Iranian government should be signed on Monday, and one of the most significant Czech industry groupings, the Czech Chamber of Industry and Transport, has signed an agreement with its Iranian counterpart. Minister Mladek explained to Czech Radio how the government-level cooperation could play out.
At the ministerial level, there will be a mixed commission and there will also be a subcommittee. It will deal, for example, with energy. There is interest in power plants of all types, or in transport, there is interest in the modernization of the railway, which I discussed with the Minister of Transport, and it will be possible to discuss a whole range of technical questions on an official basis so that companies can win public tenders.
The Czech minister argues that what local manufacturers can offer in Iran is German quality at more than reasonable prices. Czech companies are also building on a fairly solid reputation dating from the era before most of the economic sanctions kicked in and even back to the times of the former Czechoslovakia when it was a significant trading partner with Iran, then ruled by the Shah's regime. One contract has already been signed during the official Czech visit for Brno-based tractor maker Zetor to deliver 250 tractors to Iran. And Czech steelmaker Moravia Steel also has high hopes of landing a significant contract to take part in the creation of a cross-border rail corridor towards Azerbaijan. And while many of the foreign Iranian contracts will not be flowing immediately, many foreign companies have already started positioning themselves. The significant step now is that Iran has, to a large extent, although some sanctions are still being maintained, come out of the cold as regards the world financial and banking system. The loans and credits for underwriting specific contracts can now be prepared. Hanna Hikilova is spokesman for the Czech state agency EGAP, which offers insurance and credit to companies doing business in high-risk countries. She said the battle for some big contracts had already started.
It's been going on for at least a year. We should not fool ourselves that a whole series of lucrative orders, for example, in the refinery or oil sector, are just starting. A lot of these have already been sealed with some countries.
The backing that EGAP offers is likely to be crucial, with Iran still having one of the worst credit risk profiles around.
Chris Johnston with that report. Commemorative events are being held around the country to honour the memory of Jan Palach, a Charles University student who set himself ablaze on Wenceslas Square 47 years ago to protest against growing public apathy to the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. His act rekindled the desire for freedom in the nation and was a powerful motivating force behind the 1989 protests that toppled communism. Daniela Lazarova has the details.
47 years ago, just 5 months after the Soviet-led Warsaw Pact invasion crushed the Prague Spring reforms in his homeland, Jan Palach made the ultimate sacrifice. He set himself ablaze on Wenceslas Square in an effort to rouse the nation from its growing apathy. He died 3 days later. His funeral turned into a national protest against the occupation, rekindling the desire for freedom and enabling Czechs to hold their heads high. On the anniversary of his self-immolation, January 16th, the country's top officials, cultural figures and ordinary Czechs visited the modest plaque at the top end of Wenceslas Square to lay wreaths and light candles in his memory. Human Rights Minister Jiří Dienstbier said Palach's act serves as a permanent reminder that we must defend freedom, democracy and human rights and should never take them for granted. Students from grammar schools and universities are holding a chain hunger strike in the days between his self-immolation and his death, just as they did back in 1969. Film director Kristina Vlachová, who shot a moving documentary about Palach's legacy, stressed the importance of keeping it alive.
Před ním ještě byli dva lidi, jeden ve Varšavě, Richard, a
Actually, two young people chose the same form of protest shortly before Palach. One was in Poland and another in Ukraine. But we are certain that Jan Palach did not know about them. He acted on his own counsel as a socially engaged and politically aware individual. Many of the papers today say he protested against the 1968 invasion, but he left a letter saying that he wanted to wake the nation from its apathy.
On Saturday, a memorial to Jan Palach was unveiled at Alšovo Nábřeží in Prague, an embankment near Jan Palach Square. The memorial, designed by US architect John Hayduk, is dedicated to Palach and his mother, each represented by a house engulfed in flames, one bright, proud and upright, the other dark and bent in grief. A plaque at the base of the monument displays David Shapiro's poem, The Funeral of Jan Palach, which reportedly inspired Hayduk's work. The ceremony was attended by members of Jan Palach's family, U.S. Ambassador to the Czech Republic, Andrew Shapiro, Israeli Ambassador Gary Corin, Prague Archbishop Dominik Duka and Prague Mayor Adriana Karnáčová, among others. Meanwhile, work continues on transforming Jan Palach's home in the town of Šetaty into a permanent museum. The National Museum, which now administers his home, said on Saturday that 31 architects are in the running for the Palach Museum project. The head of the National Gallery, Michal Lukeš, says the winning proposal must meet three basic criteria. Palach's former home must serve as a monument, an exhibition and a place for meditation. The authorities want it completed in time for the 50th anniversary of Palach's death.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. And now I'm joined in the studio by Chris Johnston with the summary of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin with the women's biathlon, and Gabriela Sokolová has won the mass start at the Ruhpolding, Germany, and has consolidated her first place in the World Cup competition. With the help of a 100% success rate on the rifle range, the Czech finished around 14 seconds ahead of second place Franziska Hildebrand. At the halfway stage in the World Cup competition, Sokolová now has 611 points, a 73-point advantage over her nearest rival, Marie-Dorin Haber. In tennis, the main Czech hopes in the first Grand Slam event of the season, the Australian Open, Tomáš Berdych and Petra Kvitová, are both through to the second round. Both of the Czechs are seeded sixth and both overcame their first-round opponents in straight sets. In the women's singles, Lucy Hradecká and Klára Kukalová both tumbled at the first round. Czech men's handball has been going through difficult times recently, but a glimmer of hope has come with the Czech team keeping alive their qualification hopes for the World Championships. The Czechs made their lives difficult with an away loss to Turkey, and that meant they needed to win by at least four goals at home. That target looked unlikely at the end of the first half, with the Czechs winning by just 1 point. The difference came in the second with the arrival of goalkeeper Petr Stochel, and the Czechs eventually ran out winners by 34 points to 28. They now face a playoff in June for the World Championship berth in 27, with the opponents to be known at the end of this month. Staying with handball, Czech star Filip Jicha watched Saturday's game against Turkey from the sidelines. The Barcelona player is still recovering from a pelvis operation undertaken in November. He is still far from being capable of undergoing normal training and looks doubtful for the playoff in June. Coach Daniel Kubeš says, if anything, Jicha's absence is being felt more in defence than in attack. And finally, in the Czech ice hockey Extraliga, the faraway leaders Liberec suffered a rare defeat when they travelled to Zlín. The home team triumphed 2-1, largely thanks to an outstanding performance by the home goaltender. At the other end of the table, Karlovy Vary finally came off the bottom with a 4-3 win against Litvinov, which is now propping up the rest of the league. In spite of the defeat, Liberec on 82 points still have a 13-point advantage over second-placed Sparta Prague. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the sports news.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. The Czech Republic has an enormous wealth of castles, mansions, monuments and other historical landmarks, much of which is in need of repair. One of the groups working to improve the situation is the Czech National Trust, which is based in Great Britain. Ian Willoughby met its founder, Dr. Irena Edwards, for this edition of One on One.
Dr. Irena Edwards is the head of the Czech National Trust, a UK-based organisation that supports conservation in the Czech Republic. Dr. Edwards left Prague at a young age and continued her law career in Britain, where she became a high flyer in the corporate world. Her dual qualification meant she was much in demand when the Iron Curtain came down, and she spent much of the 1990s helping UK firms get a foothold in her now democratic native country. When we spoke at the tea rooms of London's Royal Academy of Arts, of which she's a member, I asked her what had sparked the formation of the Czech National Trust. But I was first curious as to what had led Dr. Irena Edwards to leave her homeland to begin with.
Well, I have not liked living in a communist country. It somehow infringed my basic ideas about how I should be living. And I was sort of working with people who were involved in Charter 77, even when I was a bit too young and I didn't sign it. But I was working with them and my boyfriend signed it. And I sort of basically was politicized very early on. And I really, really thought that this is not my life. So I just emigrated in 79, 80.
Had you studied law in Prague?
I studied law in Prague. I have got a doctorate from Charles University in law, and then I requalified in Britain, and I'm a solicitor.
Was it a hard thing to adjust to a whole other law system?
It was incredibly hard. I have absolutely hilarious stories told by various tutors from the law school in London, because I was permanently not understanding basic principles. Like, it was unknown for me to go to a tutor and ask, what is this mortgage? This is a ridiculous concept. We don't have that. In the end, because I never learned English at school, I learned from listening to people in England. I couldn't often write it down in the law school, so I was borrowing notes from this very nice Cambridge graduate next door. I was copying them, and then I was learning from them. But needless to say, I passed. And that time, it was 48% pass rate of English graduates to do that course which I was trying to do.
And apart from the concept of mortgages, what was the single hardest thing to kind of get your head around here?
Oh my God, well, definitely trusts. Trust is something which is just, that was a totally, totally unintelligible concept. And of course also the unwritten British constitution. I remember that was taught to me in a fish and chip shop by my husband night before the exam. Because I have given up of ever understanding the concept. So my husband just talked about it over fish and chips. And I went and passed the exams next day.
If I understand it right, you went back in the 90s to do business in Prague. How did you find that?
It was amazing. I found myself the only dual Czech and English lawyer in town. So I had a rather easy ride. Well, easy ride. I found myself acting for most of the British PLCs trying to come in and buy Czech silver, and sort of permanently stuck in a steel mill of Northern Moravia doing deals. Well, it was an interesting period. I remember that nothing worked properly. It took us hours to get to the factories, and then I was sitting there with 25 men, all of them smoking 70 cigarettes a day. I've got tender memories, I think, of it.
From your perspective, how long did it take the Czechs to kind of appreciate the idea of rule of law?
Well, it did take a little bit, but I have to say that Czechs are a pretty nippy nation. They actually take to professional concepts fairly well. I did have to deploy various interesting sort of sets of behavior to start with. Like one of the most hilarious things were that you would have whole management of the factory coming to a meeting. You would negotiate for 18 hours a concept, which they would understand, agree, then they would go away and come next day, and it would be all gone, and it wouldn't be there, and we could start again. So in the end, I deployed a system that I had a yellow sticker, and where we sort of wrote everything which we said, and we signed both sides every page. Every night, we signed all the pages which we have agreed, and all the yellow stickers which we have agreed.
Stop them slipping back or changing things.
Exactly. Next day, because it was next day, it would start again.
When did your interest in preservation begin?
Well, I was always interested in preservation and in art and heritage. My granny was the first person who sort of brought it across. My granny was a very formidable woman, and she ran as a castellan, as a manager, one of the largest Gothic castle in Czech Republic, Castle Kost, for like almost 30 years after the communists took it over. And I understand that the family of my granny and my grandpa were there in servitude to the Dalborgo-Netolických well before that. So I was actually, my granny, as soon as she found out that I can speak languages, she would use me mercilessly in the summer as a volunteer and pay me really measly money, like 10 crowns a week. So that it was
as a tour guide.
As a tour guide, and because I spoke German and Russian, and so she just didn't speak any of those languages. So she used me for that. And then I saw my granny running around the village and trying to persuade people with her head, trying to persuade people that she has got water running across sort of some valuable painting in a castle, and would they give her some money to do something about it. It was very, very exciting, and I always appreciated art. And actually, my study of law was a real mistake. I at the same time was accepted to Academy of Arts, and I chose law, which I thought always was a mistake. So this is really, really, I'm just, you know, coming back to what I was meant to do, and I'm sort of connecting the circle together, I would say.
When you were going back to Prague, when you were spending time in Prague and the Czech Republic in the 1990s or the 2000s, would you have often gone to chateau or decrepit mansions?
No, not at all, because I was working 24/7. I was heavily exploited by a city law firm. No, I didn't. I only remembered how wonderful it was and how I used to do it when I was a small child and when I was going to see my granny.
So what sparked the establishment of the Czech National Trust?
My working with a small English-based charity called Friends of Czech Heritage, whom I then chaired for 2 years. And as I was running around Czech Republic speaking about English heritage to castellans and other people, they all said, well, this is all right that you come here, you know, you collect 500 quid or 1,000 quid, and then you go and restore bits and bobs of our heritage. But actually, it's about something else. We need more. And so I started delving in, and I discovered them all, that there was a real sort of what I would say, that what I never thought about much, because I was always working very hard in a city, and I traveled extensively in my job because I was head of Central Eastern Europe, so I was always in some sort of obscure place like Almaty or something. So I discovered that the communist era was very damaging. It left properties uncared for, changed their use often to their detriment, and mainly instilled in people a feeling that heritage had nothing to do with them. It was for the state to care. And that was the message which I was getting from people, from the stakeholders of the idea. And that's got me to try and establish it. Though it took some time, because the idea is not mine and it's not new. There were several groups of people who in the 90s tried to do it. And actually, I met at some point Prince Charles, and he told me he tried that in the 90s, and he failed. And he was actually quite funny about it, and he said, well, keep me informed. And then he sort of turned back to me and said, Czechs are tricky.
Given that there are Czech state agencies looking after old buildings and castles and so on, How do they view private institutions also seeking to help?
Well, I have spent almost 2 years running around Czech Republic talking to all the potential and varied stakeholders of the idea of heritage and care thereof. So I have formed some good relationships, and I can say that we are sort of well tolerated by all groups which I met. And I did speak many times to the general director of a state heritage institute and to the ministry people in charge of heritage and to the private association of private owners and to many of the sort of like numerous now people from various villages who started associations to care for some disused property nearby. And I must say that that even made me feel more determined to establish something which could work similar way as British National Trust. But in Czech Republic, it would take in account the different historical, legal and other circumstances which are leading to its establishment.
How do you think the Czechs have done in looking after their material heritage?
Well, I think there was lots of the properties were saved and they look wonderful again. And one has to look at it as that it's not that long. It takes quite a long time to actually sort out a heritage which has been neglected to that degree as it was in 20 years. I'm hopeful.
Also, there's a lot of it.
And there's a lot of it. Yes, there's actually what I wanted to say. One of the reasons which I forgot to mention was that the Czech Republic lists over 40,000 sites classified as national heritage. And there are 12 UNESCO sites, which in terms of per meter ratio is more than France or Italy. So there is a reason. And, the restitutions and to private owners, well, they do their best, so does the state. But it's not for state to care. You have to establish really a community which will look after these properties in place where they are and start treating them as their own, like in Britain. Well, I'm hopeful. That's what I think will at some point happen.
Dr. Irena Edwards was Ian Willoughby's guest for that edition of One on One, and that brings us to the end of our programme here on Radio Prague. Just a reminder that all our programmes are available online at radio.cz. You can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from Mirut Franková and all of us here at Radio Prague. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.